This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Thank you for being with us. Two conversations. Last week, if you remember, executive chef Jeff Van Geest at Miradoro put out an Instagram plea that said, "I need a miracle." He could not find staff to get him through the summer at that wonderful restaurant at Tinhorn Creek. And then the comments started to come in. I did an interview with him. We set that in motion. I had a conversation with Liam Makelam, the wonderful foodie chap in San Francisco, to find out if the same thing was happening down there, the shortage of staff. And he said, yes, absolutely right. So there was one other person, one other voice I wanted to add, and that was Chef Michael Allemeyer, one of the instructors at SAIT in Calgary. And many of the staff that kitchens are looking for will come from that graduating class. And I wanted to know from Chef Michael Allemeyer, who some of you may know from Terrace at Mission Hill, I wanted to know what he was telling his students. How was he preparing them and giving them advice for what's about to happen to them when they enter the market? It's a very interesting conversation, which is why it's a two-parter. We'll also talk about the toxicity of some kitchens handed down from generation to generation. Executive chefs yelling to sous chefs, yelling to staff, throwing spoons, whatever, just making life miserable in the kitchen, all for the sake of putting a plate. The second interview is with one of the most, if not the most interesting winemaker in British Columbia and perhaps in Canada, Anthony Buchanan. I'm fascinated by the wines that he's putting out, and we're going to do a two-parter. The second part is going to be 15 or 16 wines that he's releasing. One of them is a combination of grape, apples, and dandelions. And he's making fabulous wines. So Anthony Buchanan in part two of this edition of Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabetta Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the bistro at Hillside Winery is also open with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of six or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. This is an ongoing story that started last week with executive chef Jeff Van Geest at Miradoro Restaurant at Tinhorn Creek on the Golden Mile in the Okanagan. He sent out a post on Instagram that said, "Friends, I need a miracle. Things keep going from bad to worse for staffing. I'm willing to work a lot for my business and my kitchen and my team, but I can't make any more sacrifices, and I don't want to ask more of the staff than I do have already. I need a CDC, a junior sous, and more line cooks. If anyone knows, please." Then he's talking about 3 years since Anthony Bourdain had died. "And all I can think of is our collective mental and physical health. I want to create a kitchen environment where people can cook with joy and passion. Where are these people? The people I do have are fantastic, but I don't want to crush their spirits. Please help me spread the word. I'm looking for people ready to take the next step. I'm willing to take a chance on the right people." And then so the responses started to come in, and it was quite remarkable that the chef, one of the chefs actually started a second conversation about the toxicity of kitchens in some places. And then that got me going. And of course, we talked to Chef Jeff, and we talked to Liam Makelam in San Francisco, who gave us very much the same story. I wanted to follow it up with and I couldn't find him in time for last week's show, but he's starting this week. He is, of course, a former executive chef himself at the Terrace at Mission Hill Winery, at one of the great winery restaurants in the world, as judged by peers. But he is a culinary instructor at SAIT in Calgary. He is Michael Allemeyer. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Terry.
I'm sorry for the long introduction, but I had to get that I wanted to set it up on a tee for you, right? I've been able to follow the dining experiences and lack of them in Alberta, because two of my sponsors are, one is Coyotes in Banff and the other is Dean House River Cafe in Calgary. And so I've been able to follow what's happened over the last year and a half during the lockdown and the pandemic, and the roller coaster rides that they have been on. We're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm wondering what you were keeping an eye on over the last year and a half, besides your own personal health and your family.
Well, you know, sitting from the sidelines in education, per se, it's been very distressing watching our industry, watching amazing people that show up every single day to give their best to hungry people and create amazing experiences, having to watch them continually pivot, and I loathe that word now, and change and adapt to what they need to do. And I think that really sums up our industry at the end of the day, is that we are people that are committed to change, and we are very good at having to adapt to situations. And I think COVID has been probably one of our biggest tests as an industry. And I'm in awe of every day of what my fellow professionals are capable of doing, because they're literally fighting for their existence as we know it. So we in education are on the sidelines, and our role is to really introduce new talent and new support and new people into this industry that I love so much.
Michael Ollemeyer at SAIT in Calgary, the culinary instructor. What did you think of Chef Jeff's host? What was your reaction?
You know, I saw it, and I felt for it. I truly felt for Chef Jeff. I mean, I've known him for years. We have a lot of common grounds, and I could truly empathize, and I could truly feel like the anguish and the frustration in his voice. I mean, I've been in the Okanagan. I was in the Okanagan for 6 years, so I understand that whole cycle of the Okanagan with, you know, busy season, slow season, and then you throw COVID and a pandemic into it as well, and it actually made me reflect a lot on my times when I was in the Okanagan, and that hunt, always looking for great people and trying to build your team, and the frustration of wanting to deliver your best and then being hamstringed by just not having enough bodies in your team. So I totally empathize. And if, you know, as far as education goes, we want to help. We want to be part of the solution, because we see our role in the future. Maybe not the immediate present, but certainly in the future with our interns, with our grads.
Well, there are some people out there would take your grads immediately, like tomorrow, just because they know they've been trained well and they've passed the curricula. But it's what are you telling your students? Has the dialogue changed in the classroom about the world that they're stepping into?
100%. So, I mean, the reality is our role is to groom our learners for industry. We need them to be industry ready when they leave us, so that they can hit the ground running without faltering whatsoever. And it's funny, we're actually going through a redesign of our program. We do this quite often just to make sure that our program and our grads are relevant for the moment. And I can't think of a more appropriate time to be doing this. And we are keeping them in the loop. We are talking about how things are changing, how menus are changing, how menus are changing to be delivered for curbside pickup. And they have to survive the ordeals of leaving the restaurants, traveling, going home, and then maintaining that same quality in the safety of people's homes. And part of our redesign direction is we are creating programs, so management-style programs, that really focus on the health and well-being of students. And we really want these new programs to really help the students understand the reality of the industry, to help prepare them and give them tools to manage, because we firmly believe that our students are going to be part of the positive change for our industry. I mean, the reality is, change happens with generations, and we're working on the new generation. So we really want to make sure that our students are focusing on self-awareness, team dynamics, human skills. So when they do go into industry and when it's their turn to lead and build culture, that it's a positive culture.
There you go.
If COVID has really taught us that your environment needs to be solid, it needs to be strong, it needs to be productive, and it needs to be safe. And that's really what we want from our grads.
Michael Olemeyer at SAIT in Calgary, the culinary instructor. Did you see the, you touched on something there, just the reality of what they're stepping into. Did you see the comment from Chef A.K. Campbell?
Sadly, I missed that.
Okay, well, it was down the bottom. It says, "I feel your pain, Chef. I, too, am trying to change the unhealthy trajectory of the industry, and I, too, am running a gamut of staffing issues. The days of the numbers of hours worked, the fewer hours slept, spent finding joy, the bravado and egos built on killing oneself and one's team for bragging rights are long over and should never have existed in the first place. This pandemic has decimated our workforce. The unreasonable expectations of guests and what they're willing to pay for food and labor costs. Every year I see more and more talented people leave the industry because they are tired, and they're tired of sacrificing a work and life balance, tired of giving and taking abuse like it's some badge of honor. We're changing, but not fast enough." So I don't want to throw you under the bus, but those comments, do they strike a chord?
Oh, I mean, I know them intimately is the reality. I mean, you know my resume and what I've done and everything that I've accomplished in the past has been built basically on that culture. It was built on 100-hour work weeks. It was built on sacrificing my family time. It was built on giving up everything in my life except for my career and my work. And the reality is it's not very sustainable. So we need to change it. Our industry has to adapt. We are at a crossroads, I feel. And those words certainly, I mean, he hit it spot on. Like, there's no way you can contest or edit that because it's perfect. It's a perfect snapshot of the industry and how it can be. And it's a call to arms, I think. It's a call to, we need to be better. We need to work smarter, not harder. And one of my favorite mantras in the kitchen, and I share this with my students all the time, work smart, not hard, because there's enough work to do. And I think that is really, really important, that there's a new culture that has to be formed embraces that at the end of the day. But it's a complex situation as well, because so much of this is tied into revenue, and so much of this is tied into buy-in from the guest as well, right? So
the angry head chef, the yelling, the abuse, the throwing of the spoons and spatulas and whatever, I mean, that's been handed down from kitchen to kitchen, generation to generation. It can't go away fast enough. Surely to God, there are different ways of running a kit. Well, you know.
100%. Terry, I have never bought into that mentality. I have experienced it as a young cook, as an apprentice. I kind of went through all of that, the whole like school of fear and intimidation. And at a very early age, it resonated with me that it was not effective, that it was not a powerful way of getting the best out of your staff. And I have never tolerated that in any of my environments, whether I was in industry or in education. It just doesn't work. It's not sustainable. We have to do things better. We have to do things from a humanistic perspective. We have to build people, not knock them down at the end of the day. And we have to create an environment where people want to come into it, not an environment that pushes people away. And I'd like to think that those days of this yelling and the screaming, while it still happens, I'd like to think that there's fewer and fewer of those moments and of those individuals. But I'm an eternal optimist as well. And that's it has to stop because it isn't sustainable.
We'll be right back with part two of our conversation with Chef Michael Olemeyer at SAIT in Calgary. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabatta Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the bistro at Hillside Winery is also open with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of 6 or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley, with a reminder that all 31 days of August, it's the Cowichan Wine Festival, and Enrico welcomes you with celebration, revelation to wonderful fine bubbles, the Coronet, the Tempest, Shining Armor, Red Dragon, singer-guitarist Rolly Barrett on the deck outside, Saturdays and Sundays, weather permitting. And don't forget, August is the month to head for the Cowichan Valley, because all month long, it's the Cowichan Wine Festival. Enrico Winery, open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 5. You can get all the details you need at EnricoWinery.com. Michael Olemeyer at Sate in Calgary, the culinary instructor. Also, we touched on we, the customer. How can we make this a better experience for the kitchen? What can we do?
Well, I think one of the challenges is food is, I think, grossly undervalued in Canada. Now, food is expensive to begin with, but the experience, I don't think enough people understand the cost of purchasing food, fabricating it, presenting it in an amazing experience or an amazing environment, creating an amazing experience. And that costs, this hard costs to that. And in any other segments, in any other industry, when costs are passed on to the guest, you don't hear any issues. Like when the price goes up at the pumps, nobody gives you, like there's no pushback because people just pay the price for gasoline, right? So why is the food industry such a target in regards to that at the end of the day? I mean, you know, I've traveled a lot, and there's countries and places in the world where people truly pay what food is worth. And as such, the people who work in that industry have a much better lifestyle, and they have a much better go of it ultimately. And I think until people truly understand and appreciate and respect the value of the dining experience, it's going to be a tough hurdle to get over. But I think nothing big is done in a drastic change. It's lots of little movements. It's lots of little actions that truly create sustainable change. So I know certainly us, from an educational perspective, we're working on culture. We're working on breaking those cycles of fear and intimidation and toxic kitchens, because it's not the future. It's not sustainable, and it's been proven over and over again. It doesn't work. So I would rather tackle it with the new generation.
And Michael, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but your industry's changed. All of a sudden, drive-through restaurants are doing booming business. Wine is being sold with meals. You pick up your meal in the driveway at Dean House. Picnics at River Cafe. Sidewalk tables, like right on the street, for a matter of fact, at Coyotes and Banff.
Yep.
And food trucks, all of a sudden, boom. You can't build and create a food truck fast enough. People, I wonder how much the industry has changed in these 2 years, and what will it look like, say, 2022?
That is the question, isn't it? And I think if we can control our numbers, if we can get enough vaccinations in arms, if we can get enough of the herd immunity built, we can return to normal. But I don't think the normal is going to be what it is. I think people are still going to be cautious. I think for the next year, everyone is eager to break the cycle that we've been in.
Yes, sir.
Because quite frankly, it's not what restaurants were designed to do. Restaurants are amazing places where you can go for an experience, and for a couple of hours, you're on like a mini vacation, and you get a mental break, and you get to nurture your mind and your body. And that's truly, in my opinion, what a restaurant is all about, is creating that. And just picking food up at the curb or having, you know, a delivery service drop it off, it's a pale and a sad comparison. And I think the reality is, as a society, we need to work collectively to put this behind us, so we can get back to supporting those restaurants and creating those life-changing experiences. I think about, you know, some of the most memorable moments of my life have happened in a restaurant, whether in the back or the front of the house. And it's in my blood, it's in my DNA, and I just can't wait. I just can't wait to get back with the people that I care in my life and then have those memorable moments again.
Thank you, Michael, for doing this. I know you have a day of classes ahead of you, but maybe I warmed you up a bit.
For sure. Absolutely.
Michael Alemeyer, a culinary instructor at SAIT, Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. And I first discovered him at one of the great top 10 winery restaurants in the world, the Terrace at Mission Hill Winery in the Okanagan, at the very top of his game, and now an instructor, and those students are coming our way. We need a workforce.
As far as the Okanagan and well, any kitchen for that matter goes, we always have lots of eager students looking for internships. The intern season has changed a little bit for us. They will be doing their internship this fall. So if people in the Okanagan are looking for interns for that last quarter of the year, kind of starting in September, reach out to me and let's see what we can do as far as placing some of our people into your environments.
And how do they find you on the internet?
Chef Alemeyer. On Instagram or Twitter.
Okay.
Would be the best way. Just send me a DM.
And what's the website for SAIT?
SAIT.ca.
Thank you. Thank you, Chef.
Absolute pleasure talking again.
Michael Alemeyer at SAIT in Calgary. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley, with a reminder that all 31 days of August, it's the Cowichan Wine Festival, and Enrico welcomes you with celebration, revelation to wonderful fine bubbles, the Coronet, the Tempest, Shining Armor, Red Dragon, singer-guitarist Roly Barrett on the deck outside, Saturdays and Sundays, weather permitting. And don't forget, August is the month to head for the Cowichan Valley, because all month long, it's the Cowichan Wine Festival. Enrico Winery, open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 5. You can get all the details you need at EnricoWinery.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. They are delighted to let you know that their Osoyoos East Bench Tasting Room has reopened for tastings, and they suggest you book as soon as you can. Guided wine tasting from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They offer a private winemaker tour and tasting, and of course, they offer sales and complimentary shipping with orders of 12 bottles or more. We welcome back Beta and Chris Tolley. All the details at mooncursor.com. Anthony Buchanan, winemaker, founder of, strangely enough, Anthony Buchanan Wines in Culloden. Hello. How are you, Anthony?
Doing well. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Your neighbors, Birch Block, Murray and Sarah. Who else is now in Culloden? Because it's starting to raise its profile nicely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great to see. Culloden's always kind of been on my radar as a potential spot for some wineries. So actually, Birch Block is my neighbor to the north and sort of the top of the East Hill. We have Black Market Wine Company. So we're all pretty much, we can talk through the fence with one another and share equipment and exchange ideas. It's a really nice little area here. There's three of us in one little spot, and then you head further down into Culloden, you've still got Crazy Legs and Plot Wines, and I've heard some rumors that there is another winery potentially coming in next year. So you'll have, you know, about six wineries. So Culloden will be probably a really good destination for people.
What was planted on your land, or did you do all the planting?
We are actually leasing the property and an adjacent property. So we have roughly about 10 acres under vine. So these vineyards are pushing 20 years.
Nice.
We have, it's great because I'm starting to work with some fruit that's really starting to showcase the land. So our old vine, self-rooted Chardonnay, is about 24 years old. And then you progress up the hill. We've got Pinot Gris, Gewurztraminer, and then the other side of the property, there's more Chardonnay and some Pinot Noir.
Now, I know that they came with the property, but would you have leaned in that direction, or did you say to yourself, I'm going to work with whatever's planted there?
I've been fortunate. I've worked with the fruit and the owners for the last few years, so it was a real... real special for me to actually take the property over when they asked me in December. And I've talked about potentially taking out some of the Gewurztraminer. There's quite a bit of it. I think Gamay would be absolutely an incredible choice for the top side of the property. And, of course, we work with Gamay in our red blend called Fubar. So sure. It would be something that I'd really like to work with on my own. And so we may sort of consider that going into next year. But as of right now, pretty much the Pinot Gris, the Chardonnay, and then the Pinot Noir obviously work with inside our portfolio.
Anthony, the last time I talked to you was at the Garage East gathering. And do you still consider yourself a Garage East, or have you moved on?
Shit, that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
That's right.
Man, time flies.
I know.
I do. You know, we're I think we're forecasted this year, depending on what Mother Nature gives us in terms of the growing season. We're probably shooting for 2,300 cases. So I still think that's pretty small in terms of making wine in the Okanagan. I think probably at our max capacity, I could see probably in 2 or 3 years, you could see us reaching 3,500 cases. So still fairly small, still concentrated. I don't want to give up any of the reins inside the cellar and the winemaking aspect, even though I am really enjoying being out in the vineyard. I really want to be able to have my hands in both. So I think once you start getting larger production, it means more staff, and then you kind of start to have to delegate some of these tasks, and I don't really want to be in that position.
No.
So yeah.
And we the wine fan don't want you to do that as well. Okay.
No.
I mean, we like to think we have control, but we don't. All we can do is wine. You're going to build a winery in Culloden, are you? I see that there's an opening of tentative opening of May 22.
That's correct.
Here's what I love about you, Anthony Buchanan. You made a decision somewhere down the way. You were not going to play the game the way it's sort of laid out and formatted in British Columbia, or wine in general. You were going to make wines that we had to reach for, that was a reach for those of us who may have one too many glasses of Pinot Gris, as opposed to the wines that you were going to present. Where did you come to this realization that that was your role?
So, you know, for years and years and years, as a winemaker, you're continually asked from bloggers, writers, critics, judges, like, what is your philosophy? How does that dictate your winemaking style? And I think for me, it took me up until probably about 3 years ago to really sort of figure that all out. And it was basically, I'm proud that I sort of learned how to make conventional wine and make wine pretty much squeaky clean. So I went to a good school. I got some really good education. I worked with some great winemakers along the way. And it was just continually learning. And it's just one day you sort of just wake up and you think of some of these conventional wines, they're kind of lifeless and they're dead. And, you know, we're taught how to add sulfur to, you know, to inhibit microbial activity at pH correct, whether it's, you know, 0.5 or 0.8 molecular. And it's just like, you know, like there's some truth to that. And it all depends on if you're, you know, on a mass scale. But I think for me, being a small producer, I really wanted to sort of take a couple of steps back and really look at the land where the fruit was coming from and the growers behind it and sort of make the best representation of that grape variety from that vineyard and sort of bring in this less is more concept. And I just find wines that have less sulfur, have no additives, are not soaked full of oak, that are basically gently handled. It's almost like, you know, steeping a tea. You put the tea bag in your hot water and you dip it a couple times and you take it out rather than letting it sit there for, you know, 20 minutes and then squish the tea bag with your spoon alongside the cup. And you got this really dark extracted thing that you can barely drink on its own. So you have to add cream and sugar to it, and in a way it's kind of like winemaking. If you farm really good quality grapes, you handle them gently inside the winery, you don't have to add a lot of these things that cover up some of the holes. So I really wanted that expression in my wines. It's wines that, you know, I've kind of gravitated towards with my own palate, my own style, and that's kind of how it all kind of came to.
Can I Let's put all of the wines in the second part of this interview, okay? But we'll have to do a speed round because we've got to go all the way from Foubar through Gamay to Pinot Blanc, because I've got a list. Literally, I've got two pages here. But the ones that we really want to talk to are very different and very wonderful. They're the three wines that I tasted, and I can't wait to tell you about them. His name is Anthony Buchanan. You did say yes, didn't you?
Yes.
Anthony Buchanan, winemaker, founder at Anthony Buchanan Wines, Culloden. We'll be right back. Wait until you hear about the wines. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. They are delighted to let you know that their Osoyoos East Bench Tasting Room has reopened for tastings, and they suggest you book as soon as you can. Guided wine tasting from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They offer a private winemaker tour and tasting. And, of course, they offer sales and complimentary shipping with orders of 12 bottles or more. We welcome back Beta and Chris Tolley. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. If you go to the website, the growing flock includes Black Swift Vineyards and Screaming Frenzy. There's a link there. The Scoundrels at Crown and Thieves, there's a link there. If you're heading for The Hatch, see if you can get there for their Hatchy Hour, their version of a happy hour. 20% off bottles purchased in the picnic area between 2:30 and 5:30. The Hatch is also the home of Black Swift Vineyards, Screaming Frenzy Wines, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59, and Smoke Show Barbecue. But they do ask you to come on down, and they'll do their best to facilitate you and your group and shower you with love, affection, and wine. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This is Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. The details for the show can be found at mulliganstew.ca. And the details are important because I have given you a list, a wonderful list of wines that we're going to talk about with Anthony Buchanan. His name's on the label, so we'll talk to him. Three that I tasted, and we're going to start with the ones that are coming, that they're almost here, maybe even some of them already released by now. Are you ready, Anthony? It's going to be a speed round.
Absolutely.
Foubar, I love Foubar. Foubar, your red blend, what's in there?
Yeah. So it's we're just actually going to be bottling it next week, so we anticipate probably a release date probably for August 1st. But it's a fun little, fresh little number, great, slightly chilled, and kind of a patio wine, and great with lots of different types of food.
What's in the blend?
This year is a little bit different. It is Zweigelt, Gamay Noir, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Syrah, Muscat. Gotta throw the Muscat in there.
What's carrying the load there? Which one is your primary juice?
The Zweigelt will be the number one, highest percentage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Where's your Gamay coming from?
Gamay from the 2020 vintage was from the Three Boys Vineyard down in Oliver. I wanted a little sort of brighter fruit style, leaner, so we just picked it about a month earlier than normal. But yeah, it worked out great.
I just can't wait for Gamay to make its presence felt in the Okanagan, because I think we can grow great Gamay. I think, frankly,
yeah, totally agree.
And Vancouver Island the same. I just think we're perfect for it.
Yep, I agree, totally. Yeah, I think you're going to see more and more of it coming down. We actually did a single varietal this year, too, that we're small lot, so we're pretty excited about it.
You had some Gruner. You were thinking about planting or growing Gruner. Did you do it?
We have not. We've talked about it. That is on the table. That's something that I really like that in the snafu, and obviously for some sparkling, too, would be a really cool idea. So it's coming.
How about your Wild Ferment Brut? Is it coming?
Yes, we're actually disgorging. We started to disgorge this on Friday, so it's a little bit later than normal, but I've just been so busy with vineyard activities this year and, of course, building the winery. So we start disgorging Friday, so look for that probably an August 15th release.
And oh, wonderful. Ancestral Method, right?
Yes, correct, yeah.
Your Pinot Noir, big black fruit and sage and floral, got a little spice in there. When's the Pinot coming?
We're just about sold out of the 18, so that won't be till sort of a little bit sort of later, mid-fall, I guess. Probably look for that and the Syrah probably around the same date. Probably look for it around September, October.
Okay, the whole cluster Syrah.
Yes. Yeah, that's been a fun experiment that's turned into something that's been actually quite amazing. So we started doing the whole cluster Syrah in 2017. We've dabbled a little bit depending on fruit quality, where we've held back a little bit of fruit, destemmed it, and threw it on top of the whole cluster, or vice versa. But it's, I just find it, it really works with Syrah. I really like the sort of that herbaceous, savory, textural kind of characteristic that it brings to the wine. And over time, you get these really beautiful, silky wines. So that's definitely going to be in our repertoire going forward.
Anthony Buchanan, winemaker and co-founder of Anthony Buchanan Wines, Culloden. Is this the year we get a Lawson blend?
Yes, we're very happy to announce that Pinot Blanc is back for the 2020 vintage, and we are actually set to bottle that next week. We've actually got a lot of bottling to do next week, and that's going to probably hit some shelves, I would think, around July 15th.
Is it actually called the Lawson?
Yeah, Lawson is our, yeah. Is our son.
Yeah.
So Pinot Blanc, we've got our daughter's name, Ashlyn, on our Pinot Noir, and it's just, it brings them into the family business name. They think they're celebrities, so they love it.
Listen, Anthony, yes. As you know, I fell in love with the Pinot Blanc. I really shortchanged Pinot Blanc for the longest time because I couldn't find one I liked. I loved it. Now, will it stay the same, or will I have to adjust?
No, it's pretty much I'm doing it the same way. There'll be the odd vintage depending on volume. I may experiment with, you know, partial concrete ferments, but in general, we always barrel ferment it. There is going to be some new oak. I have shifted to larger format barrels in the 2020 blend, just to sort of decrease the amount of that oak profile. So I think you'll approve. You'll really enjoy it.
How's the Ashlyn? Tell us about the Ashlyn this year.
Ashlyn Pinot Noir, comes from the vineyard in Culloden. So, the only thing that I changed there's two things. We decreased the amount of new oak. So it's just under 10% new oak into the blend. And we actually upped the whole cluster this year. So we're looking at probably about 15% whole cluster. I've generally been a little bit lower, but the fruit was really good in 19. It's unfined, unfiltered, very low sulfur. It's the best expression of Pinot Noir that I've made so far under my own label.
Congratulations, Ashlyn. Way to go.
Thank you.
All right. I hold in my hand the Anthony Buchanan 2020 Viognier, tasted just 2 days ago. It's not like anybody else's either. What are you doing?
No.
What are you doing?
So it's pretty simple. You know, the fruit comes from the Smokey Valley, from Lacote Vineyard down in Coston. Second year transition to organics. The grower there, Steve Roche, is just an amazing guy and very talented at what he does. So basically we whole cluster press it. We hold back about 2%, which I destem and skin ferments. But the rule of thumb with these wines is if it flows, it goes. So basically, it's allowed to settle, and then we're just leaving maybe 5% of the really compact leaves in the bottom of the tank before we rack. So it's got 95% solids, which really sort of pushes that sort of pretty reduction in the wine. And then, of course, we're picking it a little bit earlier than I would think that probably most winemakers are. So it's not this big, high alcoholic, oily wine. It's got great fruits, pure, fresh, lively, but it's very, very well balanced wine.
There's only, by the way, 1,596 bottles for wine fans. I have 1,586. Don't count on that one. But there's not a lot. It's gone. It was gone immediately. So that's a 2020 Viognier. Do you know the price point?
I'm horrible at remembering the price of my wine.
Talk to your marketing people, okay?
Yeah, I know I'm horrible. But I guess the one thing I should mention with the Viognier, it's 100% cask fermented. So it's fermenting in a 1,000-liter cask, and then we got some neutral barrels as well. So it just works.
I have the Anthony Buchanan Green Label wine in front of me. The 2020, listen to this, friends, the 2020 Grape, Apple, and Dandelion, in that order. Viognier, Braeburn, Pink Ladies, and Dandelion.
This is something that I've been sort of thinking about for a while, and probably the last 2 years I thought, okay, I really want to do something different. And utilize what the Okanagan has to offer in terms of fruit. Besides, you know, wine grapes, the property that we have in Culloden, we've got some apple trees here too. So, and I thought what better pairing would be some Viognier, some organic Viognier, some organic apples, and why not throw some dandelions in there, you know, just to sort of make something interesting and create some biodiversity in our portfolio and just kind of give something, a different wine, a different beverage for people to sort of try and really kind of maybe open up the mind a little bit. And it worked out great. I'm really super happy with the way it turned out.
Anthony, you didn't make the kids pick the dandelions, did you?
Actually, I picked them myself because okay. The kids were in school. So, yeah, we picked them. We harvested the dandelions April 15th and 16th from the vineyards here. And you just pluck the heads off. You don't use the stems because they're really green and bitter. And we just ferment the yellow head part.
And what was that first taste like when you finally just walked and took a thief to it?
The dandelion portion creates a really like high tone floral aromatic, more or less like hay. So, and I was only shooting for 2% alcohol. So it was just basically the dandelion portion was just strictly for aromatics and texture.
Yep.
It just works really well with the Viognier and then the two varieties of apples.
And a heads up on this. Grape apple dandelion blend from Anthony Buchanan 2020. There are only
53 cases.
288 bottles.
Yes.
And I had it with spatchcock chicken. It was fantastic. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And that was the whole idea behind putting this wine together was to sort of, you know, if you're a cider drinker, you'll probably gravitate towards this. And if you like wine, you'll like it. And it's just it's something unique and something you can have some fun with. And it's kind of worked out well.
And finally, the third wine I tasted, and I absolutely love it. It was the first thing we opened, the Malbec Rosé. Unfined, unfiltered. It's all Malbec, bottled February 15th, 2021. And you put it in a glorious Riesling bottle, tall, thin, beautiful, handsome as hell. I love the color. I absolutely love the approach as it just exploded in my mouth. It's a really fine rosé.
Thank you. Obviously, 2019 was our first go with producing rosé, and I liked the wine, but I knew that after 6 months of being in a bottle, I thought, okay, we need to take a slightly different approach. So the difference with this year is we did it in two different picks. We picked early. The first pick was, I think the bricks were like 18.3, whole cluster pressed. So basically champagne, very slow cycle on the press, not to extract any bitterness or any color. And then the second pick was about just under 3 weeks later. And that was basically harvested by hand, brought into the winery, dumped into a tank with some dry ice, and we did basically a semi-carbonic style. So once I get about 2% alcohol, I always press it off. And then they fermented separately in a combination of neutral and stainless barrels, and then laid to rest over the season, and then blended right before bottling. So you get this really high acid, bright flavors with the first pick. And then the second pick, you get this beautiful carbonic bubblegum, raspberry, high-tone fruit, and then you blend them together. It's a perfectly balanced rosé.
Anthony, did you care what the color was?
I think when you put wine in a hock bottle, a flint hock bottle, you want to showcase the color, and I think it's sexy as hell.
There you go. I forgot a couple, and I'm going to go back. We didn't talk about your Viognier, but it's grand. It really is really fine.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it seems to be popular. I think we sold a pallet in 4 days, so it seems to be popular, which is great. And it looks like I'll continue to have access to this fruit, so it'll be a skew that we, or a wine, I guess I should say, we'll be producing for a long time.
And did the Snafu sell out as well?
Snafu is just about sold out. I think we're down to our last few cases of last year's vintage, and then the 2020 will be coming out shortly.
Skin fermented white blend. What's in there?
This year's a little bit different. It's predominantly Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay Musqué. We have some Semillon in it this year. There's a little bit of Gruner Veltliner, so it's I find it to be a lot more complex than the 19.
And what about Trois?
Trois, that's we just bottled that 2 weeks ago, so that is our 100% orange wine, consisting of Gewurztraminer, Chardonnay, Musquet, and Sauvignon Blanc, which is basically, it's a month on the skins, and then it's basically allowed to age in third fill Russian oak and some concrete.
When will the experimenting be over, and when will you settle down to become predictable?
I don't see it happening. I have this fire under my butt. I can't put it to words, but it's too much fun. You know, I'd rather have a whole bunch of little magic potions going on inside the cellar than four or five tanks. I figure it's 2 month window that you work 12 to 17 hours a day, and it's I look forward to it every year. So I don't think it'll ever end.
Wow. All right. How do people find you? Websites, etc.
So antibuchananwines.ca is the best way to get a hold of us. We also have their Instagram at antibuchananwines. Those are two great little avenues for people to find us. And obviously the website has always been continued to update with where to find our wines. And of course, if you can't find them, you just contact us and we'll ship your wines directly to your house.
Well, thank you for doing this. You have my complete and undivided attention. I love what you're doing. I love your approach. And actually, I wrote down something you just said, a slightly different approach. The slightly changes from sometimes it's a capital S slightly, sometimes it's a small S, but it's a slightly different approach. Everybody else can march to their own drummer. You are going to do what Anthony Buchanan tells you to do. Well done.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. If you go to the website, The Growing Flock includes Black Swift Vineyards and Screaming Frenzy. There's a link there. The Scoundrels at Crown and Thieves is a link there. If you're heading for The Hatch, see if you can get there for their Hatchy Hour, their version of a happy hour. 20% off bottles purchased in the picnic area between 2:30 and 5:30. The Hatch is also the home of Black Swift Vineyards, Screaming Frenzy Wines, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59, and Smoke Show Barbecue. But they do ask you to come on down, and they'll do their best to facilitate you and your group and shower you with love, affection, and wine. All the details at thehatchwines.com.